Welcome, everyone, to the DC Beer Show. We are at DC Beer across social media. Brandy, what are you drinking this lovely evening?
Hi, Jake and everybody. I am drinking Dynasty. I know it's not March anymore, so don't hate on me. I'm drinking Dynasty's Märzen-style amber lager, 6.3, clocking it in. I love the Argyle pattern on the thing. Mike Stein, it looks like visually you're in a disco right now, but I'm assuming you're not, unless you are. And if you are, I'm going to be upset about it.
No, Brandy, I left the discotheque, so don't worry, you're not missing anything. I am having an Essex, an extra special bitter ale from our friends at Blue Jacket. This beer is brewed exclusively with Valley Malt out of Hadley, Massachusetts. We're going to be talking to them a little bit later on the pod. And it's just a wonderful humdinger of a humdinger. You know, jammy, malty, a little bitterness, a little sweetness, just an absolute Goldilocks of a beer. Balanced, not too bitter, not too sweet, but all of the above. Jordan, Mr. Harvey of the Harvey Wilder Foundation, what are you having?
Well, you know, I feel like people have missed having a hazy on the pod, right? So, you know, I thought, why not shout out my local haze factory that I'm there every Wednesday? Especially shout out to GM. He's one of those hand truck heroes, and I'm currently having one of those bad boys. So I'm not sure if you guys got your hands on that, but that was a nice little Imperial double IPA, Mosaic Incognito, even though it's very present, Citra Motueka, and Mosaic Cryo. So just some of my favorites. And yeah, Jake, what's in the glass?
You know, in honor of our guests at Valley Malt, I looked long and hard through the beer fridge today for something from Notch Brewing. Didn't find it. Did find something from Fox Farm Cabin, their smoked Helles lager, but I'm not sure that uses Valley Malt. I think that might use Thrall, a Connecticut maltster, in addition to some other things. And so, like Mike, I settled in on Essex, which at one point I believe was British malt, as an ESB is, Maris, Otter, and Crystal. But then, in true American fashion, we threw that shit into the Boston Harbor, and now we are using Massachusetts' very own Valley Malt. Again, it's lovely on cask. It's very nice in my glass at about 55 degrees or so. Nice prickly hop presence. Little jam, little biscuits. What can you say? It's got like a nice tea-ish quality to it. It's 4%. We like it a lot. Thank you to Blue Jacket, and thank you to Andrea at Valley Malt as well. All right. We got action-packed events this weekend. Friday, today. See some DC beer folks over at DC Brow for a little happy hour. Then you're going to see some of us at a beer share. Jordan, you want to talk a little bit about that?
You know, I'd love to. We've been all around the Mid-Atlantic and the DMV, and we're finally back in Maryland for another beer share. So I'm excited about that. We're going to be at one of my neighborhood pubs, I'll call it. Third Hill Brewing Company, for those unfamiliar, it's in the home of the place formerly known as Astrolab. But hey, Third Hill is in the building, and they are doing wonderful things, brewing copious amounts of beer varieties, a scene everywhere, and loved by all beer lovers worldwide. So yeah, we'll be there. Come and see us. Bring some of your favorite mixed firm or your favorite spring patio beers, because we'll be enjoying those all beer share day.
So that is going to be Sunday, 2 to 5. In between Friday and Sunday is Saturday, and there's going to be a Women's Brew Culture Club event at Lost Generation, led by Brandy.
So this weekend is honestly the busiest weekend in April for DC Beer. Friday is a thing, Saturday is a thing, and Sunday is a thing. Saturday is the Women's Brew Culture Club, and we're at Lost Generation. We haven't been to Lost Generation since last year. It's been almost a whole year. It's our anniversary of Lost Gen, and I'm so excited to be back. It's from 2 to 5 or 1 to 4. I don't know. I'll look it up, and I'll put it on the Instagrams for you. What else is going on? So many things.
Yeah, we actually, you know, if you're busy this weekend, you should be busy with DC Beer. But if you're busy this weekend, we'll forgive you. Just come and see us on Wednesday. We'll be at Other Half. Again, one of my favorite haze factories in the whole wide world. We'll be there for trivia. We do trivia every Wednesday, but at least once a month, you'll get a DC Beer Capital Trivia and Other Half exclusive trivia, right? And for our Patreon members, you guys do get a 10% discount. And one of the rounds will be all things beer. So for you guys that want to learn about beer knowledge or just kind of flex your beer knowledge muscles, come out and see us at Other Half. We get started closer to 7 o'clock, but get there at 6:30 on Wednesdays, April 10th specifically, and we'll have a good show for you.
Patreon, what's that? How can I be down and join Patreon?
Well, Brandy has so eloquently put together some wonderful signs. You can scan our QR codes on our Patreon signs when you come to our events, or you can just click our link on our Instagram page. You can also learn more about us on Twitter or X, whichever you call it. It's still Twitter for me. Yeah, you can definitely do that. And also, just check out our website, DC Beer across all social media, and dcbeer.com. Should it be starred and favorited in your favorite browser?
I want to talk about how DC Brow is the first canned NA beer, but I haven't had it. I'm curious what it tastes like. And I'm sad because Other Half has had theirs out for quite a while now and will be packaging very soon, but missed the, deadline of the being the first packaged.
Yeah, I am super curious about this as well. I don't think any of us have had the DC Brow beer. I think that all of us, the four of us on this show, we've all had all NA everything at one point. I mean, yeah. To me, is good enough where like I'm at Other Half, and if I know I'm going to be there for a couple hours, I'm going to sub in all NA everything in the middle of a session and just, kind of chill out there for a bit and then go back to, say, Tall Kiwi, which I believe is still on tap, top-notch hazy. Jordan and I just making kissy faces about Tall Kiwi. We love our Southern Hemisphere hops, folks.
You're right in that Tall Kiwi is delicious and that you can't have, four of them in 4 hours, but you could have two of them in 4 hours and two and all NA everything and still feel pretty good to go firing off the rapid response trivia answers pretty quickly. But Brandy,
I actually did the same thing. For the women's panel at Other Half that I had to MC, I started out with two NA beers. And then my job was done. I just drank whatever and then had that cocktail. Yeah. But yeah, for real.
NA beer when you're at the control board and then something when it's when the credits are rolling. But I think, Brandy, to your point, we always try to be, especially our esteemed editor, Jacob Scoopsberg, First, right? We try to scoop Washingtonian and Bard in D.C. and D.C.ist and all of our friends out there in the media scape. But I think the reality is whoever puts beer in can first, it looks like D.C. Brow is going to sort of best, quote unquote, best Other Half, if you will. Who's going to be making NA beer 2 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Because there is market share to be gained, right? NA beer is ascending. Craft beer, beer sales nationally are down. So if we can have a brow and an Other Half beer 2 years from now, 5 years, a brow and an Other Half NA beer 10 years from now, I'm on board with all of that.
Yeah, just one point. And again, it's not beer, but it's beer adjacent. I'm a huge Hoplark Hop Tea fan. And Other Half, they did a collab with them. So, they may not have canned their NA, but Other Half and Hoplark did a collab. And they canned some hop water. So I think Other Half is on the horizon of doing it. Yeah. But Brow, you guys take the cake. I'm just, I do have a can of some Other Half Hoplark in my fridge right now.
I will say when it's done well, because I've had some pretty not good NA beers that I would not drink. Here's the thing. I don't drink unless I like the flavor. Like I know a lot of people who will just drink whatever's put in front of them just to get drunk or just to drink. If I don't like the taste of it, I'm not going to drink it. I've rarely had an NA beer that I really liked. And I will say Other Half for me really is the best NA beer that I've had. So I'm very curious to try more and more. And I think the more they come out, the better they will be, right?
For sure. No, you're not wrong, Brandy. There's just forces in the market that I find don't always bring the best product to market or have it readily available. And so what I mean by that is when Jake and I were writing this piece on non-alcoholic beer, go to dcbeer.com, check out our most recent on non-alcoholic beer. We scoped the supermarket and there were hop waters and dry hop seltzers, all of these products that are not beer. They're not non-alcoholic beer. They're hop water. They didn't have Port City's hop water in this grocery store. Right. And I just felt like, yeah, the Lagunitas is good. Yeah. The Sierra Nevada is good, but I feel like the Port City is better. And that's just my palate. But to your point, Brandy, about I drink what I want and I don't just drink it to get a buzz on. I really genuinely want the flavor. There needs to be a reason and purposeful, mindful drinking consumption, even with something that's zero calories and zero carbs like hop seltzer.
Exactly.
Yeah, the Port City is the best product, but for whatever reason, I could have Lagunitas seltzer, I could have Sierra Nevada, or I forget who the third one was. And so that's what's happened. Now, we're hoping to see growth in the NA space, because I saw over a dozen brands of NA beer. Some that I didn't know, like today I learned, Peroni has a 0.0, Qingdao has a 0.0, and I haven't tried either of those, but you know, if they're better than the other half or the Brow NA beer, I mean, one, I'll be surprised. I'm biased, of course, but two, it's like the stylistically they're going for that, you know, light pale beer that cuts through street food, pizza, fries, like lo mein, you know, those foods that are tend to be pretty hefty comfort food with light, crisp, highly carbonated beer, right? But maybe you want a 0.0 beer.
All right. On that note, we've got a wonderful guest for you. Mike Stein, take it away.
I'm so excited to have Andrea Stanley, owner and founder of Valley Malt, as well as ground up stone milled flowers with us. Thank you for joining us on the DC Beer Show.
Thanks, Michael, for having me. It's great to be here with you. It's great to see you.
The last time I saw you, you were at the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History. What a great event that was.
That was a pretty amazing event, and what a final moment for Teresa McCullough, who did such amazing work in terms of craft beer history and at the Smithsonian.
Yes. We are massive fans of Teresa McCullough and her work. The archives and all the beer history she's preserved have been wonderful. But speaking of archives and beer historians, I reached out to our mutual friend, Ron Pattinson, who described you thusly. He said, Andrea has a passion for malting as strong as any brewer's for beer. She helped enormously in my Obadiah Poundage collaboration with Goose Island by making brown malt the really scary way. Something that I doubt I would have ever dared take on. She's also great company if you're a huge beer nerd with her depth of knowledge of barley and malting. So that was our good friend, Ron Pattinson. So we'll talk a little bit about Ron and his Obadiah Poundage beer later, specifically the beer and your contribution to it. But I wanted to say, they say that malt is the soul of beer. Do you believe this to be true? Does this make you a certified soul woman producing the soul of beer?
Michael, this is such a good question. I think people are the soul of beer. You know, people need to make the malt and the ingredients and the beer. And it's, if I really think about what a soul feels like to me, I would say it's the humans that put everything into what they're making that make the soul of beer. However, making malt does take a lot of humans. So I guess, you know, it's a piece of it. But I can see why people back in the day made that statement, because, you know, clearly so much about a beer relied on the malt. And even to this day, it still relies on the malt for so much of what we love about beer.
Well, that's certainly true. A lot of labor goes in and you need people for the labor. You are one of those wonderful people. And without you, Valley Malt wouldn't exist. So tell us about Valley Malt. When did you start? How's it going? And what projects are you currently working on that you're excited about?
I'm going to go real quick on the Valley Malt story. So 2009, was really interested in local food and trying to sort of have my footprint of what I ate and drank be as local as possible. And I've read an article in a local newspaper about a bakery that was starting to try to make one bread a week that had local wheat in it that was locally milled. And I thought, oh my God, I never thought about grains as a local ingredient and as an actual like agricultural product and that farmers had to grow and that was like in the soil somewhere. So that kind of started my journey into thinking, oh, I'm a home brewer. Let's try to make an all local beer, realizing that malting was this missing step. And we started our first malt house in 2010 with 25 acres of barley that was grown in a local field. And it's been a great journey of just like learning how to malt, learning about grains, trying to support more sustainable agriculture. And then, you know, understanding what it is that craft brewers in the Northeast actually might want from a local maltster. And so that can kind of answer part of like your question of what's going on right now, which is, you know, we're making really great pale malt, Pilsner malt, a Golden Valley pale, which we tried to clone like a Golden Promise style malt, but more locally, a dextrin malt. You know, we've kind of streamlined what we make because we're making 9-ton batches now, but we're also having fun. So I received a book in 2019 when I was in the Czech Republic that was written by a maltster in 1929 in the Czech Republic, translated in 2005. And we're basically trying to recreate a Czech Pilsner malt. And so that's been really fun, is just to like think about how to recreate malts that we're not currently making and why we would do that. And then like in this book, learning about, you know, even just tracing like COAs from essentially almost 100 years ago, right? 1929 is almost 100 years ago. What did they care about on their COAs, you know? And like, okay, can we even recreate those COAs with the current testing that we have? I mean, we can, but, you know, like commercial testing is always hard to find, you know, labs that can do certain things like a dextrin maltose ratio or a sugar to non-sugar ratio. So if you know anybody that wants to buy an under-modified Czech Pilsner malt.
So let's zoom back out here for a moment. What is COA? And let our listeners know, you went to the Czech Republic. What happened after that? What does Czech barley have to do with malting in Massachusetts or growing in New York? And what's a COA?
Sorry. Yeah. So COA of a certificate of analysis. So it's like, you know, if I'm a brewer, I want to know how much, like, what's the color of this malt going to be in my beer? Is it going to make me a dark beer or a light beer? Or is it going to give me a little bit of sugar that is going to create like a low alcohol beer or a lot of sugar that's going to create a high alcohol beer? So that kind of thing is like these important characteristics that you need to know. So it's a little bit of a contract in a way, like here's what we're supplying you. But as you start getting into different types of malt, you're looking at that COA to sort of figure out how it's going to impact your, like what you're going to be able to make with it. And yeah, the Czech Republic thing was like pre-COVID 2019, we were all like traveling. There was a heirloom barley conference that was going on in Munich. And we went a little bit early because we were interested in visiting with some Czech barley breeders because some of the best barley in the world for malting and beer making comes from the Czech Republic. It was like, oh man, this is like, I've been making malt now for, you know, 10 years. And this is like my big sabbatical trip where I get to go and see where it all came from. You know,
you're looking at the source. And I think it's really important to note that despite those of us in the craft beer, independent beer, small beer world, still the majority of beer sold in America is light beer. But that light beer even is based on the golden Pilsner style beers of Czechia or Bohemia. And that is based around a high quality barley as the lore sort of goes, you know, our barley grown in America wasn't as light as the famous Czech barley. So we used rice or we used corn and to produce. But anyways, yes, you are tracking the source. And so now that barley has come stateside, or there's some connection.
Yeah. It was more just we went to the promised land. I learned in my time there that actually, like, when the Czech Republic became part of the EU, there was this agreement that they designated, like, this is Czech Pilsner malt, and this is exact, you know, almost like an appellation where it's like, this is exactly how it's made. Same thing with Czech beer, you know, it had its own sort of designation with the EU. And I was like, wow, that's really cool, like, on a certain level, you know, because it's so un-American on a certain level. So from a cultural standpoint, I was like, wow, you know, that's a unified thing.
Right. Well, you do something different with regards to Blue Jacket. So we have the local brewery Blue Jacket, who's been buying your malt for at least a year now. They recently received, I don't want to say an award, but a certificate, let's say, from you, because they've been using your malt, which supports local economies or local agronomics. Tell us a little bit about, because it's not just Blue Jacket, it's everybody who uses your malt once they use enough of it.
So there's the Beer History Nerd, which is part of me and Valley Malt. And then there's sort of the sustainability and supporting local sustainable agriculture, which is a huge part of what we like exist to do. And so if a brewery like Blue Jacket buys a pallet of malt from us, that supports 1 acre of sustainable agriculture, because that grain is serving as a cover crop. It's helping with soil erosion and leaching of nutrients into watersheds. So it's a really important sustainable crop that by supporting the malting of it, you're supporting that sustainable agriculture, because otherwise it's really hard for a farmer to grow something that's sustainable if nobody's there to buy it. So yeah, so they, Blue Jacket, every time they get a pallet from us, they get a cute little card that says this pallet supported an acre of local agriculture. And then over time, they've racked up the acres so that then they get a label for their brewery that says, you know, in 2023, we supported 5 acres or 6 acres of local agriculture. And then it could be a banner where they've supported 25 acres, 50. So over time, it really builds up. That support really has impact.
Yeah. The last time I saw Roe Gunzel, who's the head brewer at Blue Jacket, director of brewer operations, he was letting me know about this. He was like, do you want to see it? But it was wonderful. And, you know, we had been having Blue Jacket's Essex, their extra special bitter. And they used to use Maris Otter and English crystal malts, but they've now switched exclusively to your malt, to Valley Malt. Tell us a little bit about some of the value outside of the environmental value your malt adds to products, you know, like local beer at Blue Jacket or even local spirits, because I know distillers are using your malts as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the sustainability is sort of our basic why we exist. But then also we have our own personalities that we each lend to how we run our malt houses, because I'm obviously Valley Malt is not the only malt house in the Northeast. And I think we're really into trying to find the malts that are coming from quite a distance that brewers just can't get away from, like something like a Maris Otter or, you know, certain German malts. Golden Promise is one of them. How do we try to make that malt locally and limit the amount of miles that has to travel to get to the brewery? Not only for sustainability reasons, but bonus, it's fresher. And that actually does come through in the wort, in the beer. When you're brewing something that was just malted 2 weeks ago, it's like coffee, you know, you can taste it and you can taste that it's has just a more intensity of aroma and more layers of flavor in there.
Yeah, well said. I've heard you use the metaphor as malt like coffee before, and it's so valid for freshness. It really makes a huge, tremendous difference with the product. And, you know, it's interesting with your malt, you've had Big brewers like Goose Island, you know, Ron Pattinson, the beer historian, mentioned using your malt in the Goose Island project, but you also sell to smaller brewers like Blue Jacket and others. Do you have a sense of, you know, the difference in selling to big brewers or small brewers? Do you have some favorites or people that you really enjoy working with?
Both, honestly, because at the end of every email is a person. And a lot of times there's just like some really lovely relationships that can form even just over email, especially when you're geeking out about malt. So yeah, no, I would say like I probably have certain biases against bigger breweries versus smaller breweries because we trend toward the smaller malt house, right? We're kind of the underdog. And so I think my biases are maybe more toward customers that are smaller. But also it's, you know, it really comes down to just like the relationships and who we're working with. And like, there are some bigger breweries like Goose Island where the people there are just so passionate about what they do and about, you know, trying to recreate this historic beers, and they have the platform to be able to do that. And yeah, just the appreciation a lot of times that bigger breweries might have to be working with a smaller supplier, that relationship actually feels really great too.
So before we close out, Andrea, I wanted to ask you a little bit about Ground Up, stone milled flours.
So Ground Up started in 2019 as a sister company to Valley Malt. We had a bakery in our town approach us about milling for them. And we found out that there was a manufacturer of these beautiful stone mills not that far away in Vermont. So we added a mill, and we just milled for that one bakery for the first year. And then COVID hit and people couldn't find flour. And we started to really realize that being a miller was something that we wanted to do. So, and that was needed. And we make stone milled flours, which are very different than the normal flour that you would find on the shelves because it hasn't been bleached or bromated or enriched. It's just the whole grain going through the mill and then being lightly sifted. So it still has a lot of nutrition, a lot of dietary fiber, really good, generally good type of carbohydrates, iron, potassium, things in it that, you know, are going to give people the nutrition that they need in their carbs. And then we just added on a pasta shop. So we're starting to make fresh pasta now out of these grains, which has been really delicious. And so, yeah, you just really get to really learn more and more about each type of grain and all the attributes of it in terms of flavor and texture. And it's kind of a fun adventure. If people are interested in cooking, baking, making pasta, I would say check out Ground Up Grain because, you know, that's what we're trying to do is just be that local mill that is trying to express the best that local agriculture is growing in terms of grains.
Andrea, thank you so much for joining us here on the DC Beer Show. You have been a wonderful interviewee. Any parting words or anything final you'd like to share with our listenership?
Just that I can't say enough about how grateful I am for you, Michael, in our friendship over the years and, you know, what you do and the platform that you give other people to be able to share what they do. I really appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Andrea. Thank you, Mike, for interviewing. All right, everybody. In addition to all the events that we mentioned, we will see you out and about. The Maryland Craft Brewers Festival is coming up as well. It's happening on the 11th of May. And by that time, there could be like six more Vanish locations in Maryland. I just learned this week there were two Vanish locations in Maryland. I had no idea. I thought there was one. But no.
Me either.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, we want to see everyone come and check us out at Third Hill. And just come check out Third Hill. You know, they make some awesome beer. And I'm not just saying that because I've had the honor and privilege to brew with them. But come check us out. And if you can't check us out, I just want to wish all of you guys nationwide and internationally, happy National Beer Day. That is Sunday. Cheers.
Be well, everybody. We are at DC Beer across social media. Please do not stare directly at the eclipse without protective eyewear. Be safe out there.
See you this weekend.